it's not plastic in itself that's the problem. It's just the way we're using it. Like, it's an incredibly cheap, incredibly durable material. It's just not designed to be used to put hand wash in that you use for a couple of weeks and then chuck in the bin. That's the challenge, right? It's how we're using it, not the plastic itself.
Yeah.
So that's why our whole business model is, you know, there's all this plastic in the ocean. Let's get it out of the ocean. Let's turn it into dispensers that you keep at your house, and you just have one. Like, for the rest of your life, you just have one laundry liquid bottle, because that's what plastic is designed to do. It's designed to last a lifetime.
That is Mike Smith from Zero Co. And this is episode 306 of Better Than Yesterday. Hello and welcome to Better Than Yesterday. I'm Osher Ginsburg, and this podcast is simply a conversation designed to help you make today a little bit better than yesterday. I guarantee it. In the next hour or so, you'll hear something to make you think, oh, I never considered that. Maybe change tack a little bit. Something that makes you think a little bit. Something that'll hopefully help you make today a little bit better than yesterday. And this is episode 306 of the show. There's 305 others to get through. If you like today's show, is with Mike Smith. He's the, I believe he's the CEO and co-founder, or founder and CEO, or just founder of Zero Co., which is aiming to eliminate single-use plastic from every Australian kitchen, laundry, and bathroom. Very ambitiously, within a year of when they get going. Zeroco.com.au. It's on Instagram, etc. There. More about Mike in a moment. A big thanks to everybody and everyone that wrote in to say where they're listening to the show. It's so fun to see where you listen to this podcast. SendOsherEmail@gmail.com is the email address. Just take a photo. You're probably listening to this on a phone, so take a photo with that phone and just email it to me. SendOsherEmail@gmail.com. A cracking one came in from Mason. I found your podcast through the boys at the Batuta Advocate. I want to thank you for a great show. Very slowly making my way through the back catalogue while very slowly cutting through steel beams. And wonderfully, he's taken a photo of what looks like to be an epic retrofitted industrial strength electric steel beam cutting machine. It looks like a dead set Widowmaker. So, Mason, make sure you wear your safety gear around that, and I hope you've got a safe way to listen to the show while you use that thing, because you would go through the rest of your life getting called lefty if you use that thing wrong. But thanks very much for getting in touch there. Cracking one came in from Chris, who is regripping skateboards in South Perth. Got to do it, and a great design there, Chris. I've got to say, great skate deck design you've got going on there. Really stoked about that. Tessa, who's sent me three fantastic pictures, going for a 16-mile run on the along the Golden Gate Bridge, which looks amazing. What a run. What a run to do. Making vegan cheese biscuits and waiting for the Golden State Warriors game, basketball. So I'm guessing, Tessa, you live up in San Francisco, because goodness me, it looks like it's all happening. 16 miles. Yeah, man. I remember runs like that. That's a fantastic, what a fantastic thing to do. What a cracking, cracking run. I'm glad you can go for that run. I'm glad you took us with you. Thank you so much, Tessa. And a big one here from Jasmine, who wanted to send a podsy. I'm listening on the very last flight out of Tokyo Haneda Airport before Typhoon Hagibis hits. Hoping all the people of Japan stay safe. Thanks for having a great podcast to distract me from during what is a slightly terrifying time. Absolutely. Pretty full on. But, you know, we'll get to all that conversation. But thank you very much for sending those through. SendOsherEmail@gmail.com. Also, a quick thanks while I'm talking about correspondence for everyone that did rate and review the show in iTunes. It really, really, really helps us a lot. So if you like the show, the very best thing you can do for us is just tell somebody else about it. The second best thing you can do is to go to iTunes. They've just done a software update, so I don't know how to do this at the moment. I think they've made the podcast app separate in everything now. I don't know for sure, though. Just go there and find this show and rate it and review it. And that really, really helps us. Big thanks to Callum, who's written How a Podcast Should Be. Osher's naturally warm and welcoming to his guests and listeners, and is a master of the art of making everyone feel at ease. Oh, thanks very much, man. I appreciate that. Shaz has written, thank you for the company down the Mitchell Freeway in Perth to work and back most days. You and your guests are very easy to listen to and love the couple around the birth of your baby. The "but I can change a nappy" or something to that effect made me cry the first time I heard you say it. And "better than yesterday" has been my motto these last few weeks. Only just found you around your 300th episode. I'm looking forward to listening to the earlier ones soon. I'm stoked, Shaz. I apologize for the theme music early on. It was pretty metally. We're very different these days, but so am I. That's very sweet. The line was, "I can't change the world, but I can change a nappy." It was just trying to keep me in my headspace around being mindful and being in this moment and not, you know, just being aware of what I can affect and, you know, understanding that trying to affect things that I can't affect are just going to send me bonkers again. So, yeah, thank you so much for that feedback. I'm really glad that resonated. Like, and along those lines, to check in with you, I guess, I know I've been talking a lot about exposure therapy in recent weeks. Someone did email me asking about dealing with obsessive compulsive disorder, which I've been diagnosed with, and anxiety, ruminating anxiety, which is what I have. But they were asking about obsessive compulsive disorder, and I wanted to share what worked for me. The uncomfortable reality that I have found, and I've tried a lot of different ways to figure this out. The uncomfortable reality is that for me to overcome the thing that I'm frightened of, I just need to be with it and practice being with the thing that I'm frightened of. That is Wolfgang, by the way. He's strapped to my chest at the moment with crumbs in his hair because I just ate a piece of banana on gluten-free bread with peanut butter. He's getting a bit hungry, so he might just pipe up in the middle of this. The uncomfortable reality is that to overcome the things that I'm afraid of, frightened of, things that terrify me, I just have to be with them and practice being with them again and again and again. A metaphor I would use is, like, say you've just learned to drive and you go to visit a friend from school. Like, we all learn to drive pretty much mostly in our late teens. You go to visit a friend from school for the first time, you're driving by yourself. But only when you're driving by yourself do you realize that their driveway is really easy to get into but really hard to get out of. And when you're reversing out, you put a massive scrape down the side of your parents' car. And you feel awful and you feel ashamed and you feel like a failure and your friends give you shit about your crap driving. And then when you get home, you get in massive trouble and you have to pull extra shifts at Macca's or wherever you work to pay it off. And so, like, this is a really shameful event. It was really horrible and it's got a lot of emotion involved. So the next time you visit that friend, you park on the street. And soon enough, you avoid going to their house altogether because it reminds you of how much you messed up the car that day and how much trouble you got in. And worse, you start avoiding reversing down all driveways to avoid dealing with those feelings and the chance that something bad might happen. So you end up living the rest of your life being restricted to going to places that you could only park the car in front of. And even the sight of a tricky driveway gives you flashbacks and gives you chills. That's quite a broad example, but you can see that the only way to get over this, you really just got to get back on the horse. You got to get back behind the wheel. The only way to overcome an irrational fear of driveways is to get in the car and start reversing down driveways. Slowly, practice with help at first, guidance, people outside the car telling you how to go, and soon enough you'll get the hang of it. To take the time to deliberately lean into what scares you, to practice, 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 and build up your confidence bit by bit. It's the same as in the gym. If you're trying to get stronger in the gym, you just push a little bit more every time. And just like at the gym, too much, you try to lift too much, you'll injure yourself. You tear muscles open, you bust ligaments. You'd be out of action for a couple of weeks and your whole, you know, goals get thrown out the window. It's about 4%. 4% of the challenge more every time. That seems to be the magic number where the growth happens. So as much as it sucks, if I want this thing in my head to get better, I know I have to do this exposure therapy. So I know I've spoken about this a bit on the show. In just a few weeks, with this new round of exposure therapy I'm doing with my therapist, I've gone from, and this might sound, you know, weird to you, but I don't care. This is what happens. I have been, up until only a few weeks ago, unable to open the weather app in my phone. Just looking at the numbers of the predicted highs was too much for me. I couldn't do it. So I had to, at first I was doing it under supervision and I sat in her office and we looked at it together, and now I do it a couple of times a day. And just in a couple of weeks, I've been able to start doing that. And so on Friday, I was traveling back from Melbourne. I was down there for a work thing. I was in the newsagent at the airport trying to grab some snacks because Melbourne Airport is terrible when it comes to trying to get food that's vegan and gluten-free. Like, seriously, it's annoying. Anyway, that's time, the conversation for another time. But I was there getting some snacks, and I saw on the newsstand a magazine called The Monthly. And on the cover saying all the stories were in there, but one of the stories, it says there's a story inside this magazine about Australian real estate prices and rising sea levels. Now, immediately the horror filled me. I was filled with it. But I grabbed the mag anyway. Paid for my snacks, paid for the magazine. I walked to the lounge. I sat down, and I opened the magazine. I went straight to this article and I read a 10-page article about local coastal councils in Australia diddling the numbers and fudging the science around sea level rise in Australia because they're trying to protect their property values and pretending that it's not happening. And I read this 10-page article and I didn't want to piss my pants, run, or shout out to everyone around me to warn them, which is what usually wants to happen. In fact, I got to the end of the article, and while, yeah, it was uncomfortable and shocking and stark and bleak and all of those things, I felt better about what I was reading about and even slightly more capable to deal with it, as I now knew a lot more about the coastline of Australia and which particular communities are most in trouble. In fact, it's fair to say that the fear I felt walking past the magazine about 30 minutes before that fear, if I had to put a number on it, would probably be about 10 times worse than what it actually felt like to read it and realize and accept the things that were in there. And that's the trick, man. My brain makes it bigger. It still sucks. It's still awful. I'm still overwhelmed. But less and less does it feel like, there was a film a long time ago. I'm showing my age. I'm old, you know that. There was a film a long time ago called, I think it was called The Neverending Story, and they were worried about a thing called The Nothing coming to take over their land, basically. And that's what it felt like for a long time, like the nothing, like there was this kind of nothingness that was beyond, you know, temperatures get to a certain point and then after that there was nothing, and I was terrified because it was like the worst thing that my brain could possibly comprehend, and it was so bad that there was nothing there, and it was horrendous. I know, Wolfie, it was too. But less and less does it feel like that. It feels right now that there's information in my head, it feels like possibility. Because now, like, okay, now we know what we can do. Slim possibility, I'll give you that. But it is possibility. And look, today, my exposure therapy today was listening to a podcast that my therapist told me to listen to, as much as I didn't want to. But I did it to distract myself. I was doing deadlifts at the gym today, so I'm lifting extraordinarily heavy shit. And hit play. And so I'm lifting heavy things while I'm listening to this stuff. It's a podcast called Outrage and Optimism, which is a show put together by the very same people that put together the Paris Climate Conference. It was really, really interesting. And to have that kind of contextualized, hearing these three people talk, these three, you know, people that are campaigning for climate reform for decades, to hear them speak and to get a, you know, to have my fears said by other people, it makes it better in some way, I guess. And with those two words, the name of the podcast, I actually get a bit of direction about how to feel about things. Like, it seems that a mixture of outrage and optimism, that seems like it can work for me today. So long story short, meds have helped me to make sure the exposure therapy is working. That's what seems to be working right now. That and baby cuddles. That's me kissing the top of his head because he's in a baby carrier on me right now. And remembering to find joy in the little small moments. I smell of his hair like that. You can't smell it, but it smells like baby hair. Oh, his rooting reflex is happening in my chest. I'm sorry, mate. There's nothing there. I know it feels like there's a boob there, but that's just my pec. I wish. As my friend Ruben Meerman, the scientist Ruben Meerman, says, these are the good old days. So let's try and enjoy them, shall we?
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So let me tell you about my guest today. Mike Smith is quite an experienced entrepreneur coming out of Sydney, Australia. He's currently building his fourth business. It's called Zero Co. And the aim there, their big lofty goal there, is they're trying to pull 1 million single-use plastic bottles out of Australia, out of the system, I guess, the recycling and system, in their first year of operation. That's 1 million is their goal, but essentially he wants to eliminate single-use plastic bottles from every kitchen, laundry, and bathroom in Australia. And their goal is to eliminate 1 million of these bottles in the first 12 months. Mike and I met quite by accident one day. I'm recording my podcast these days at the Batuta Advocate Studios, and around the corner from them is the Bourke Street Bakery, which is a famous bakery in that part of Sydney. And I went to go pick up a pie and a tasty baked treat for Audrey because she, you know, needed one of the pie for lunch. And he was just outside having a meeting. And we spoke briefly. He told me about what he was doing, asked me if I'd like to get involved. And in the spirit of wading into things that terrify me, I said, yes. Zeroco.com.au, zeroco.com.au is where you can get involved. Now, to reach his goal of 1 million bottles in the first 12 months, he needs 14,000 Australians to sign up onto their Kickstarter. As of recording this, there's a little under, hang on, let me hit refresh and you'll know exactly where is they at. Let me hit refresh here. It's just under 3,000 as we're speaking right now. I'm pretty sure that number's going to climb after you've heard this. Mike is building a unique business, one that is, as all businesses aim to do, filling a need. But it's a need that so many Australians know need to happen. We know single-use plastic is not good. We know we want to use less of it. The solution of how to use less of it and still have a modern life is a tricky one. And that's where Mike comes along. We know the right thing to do. We just want to be told what to do and we'll all do it, you know? It's a shame that it has come to businesses to take the lead here, but until our government looks at this as the national threat that it is, business is the best hope we've got. So get on board, sign up, zeroco.com.au, zeroco.com.au, and enjoy this conversation with Mike Smith. How are you, man? You good?
I'm good.
You're good?
I'm good. As excited, yeah? Stressful.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's great.
As we speak, I walked in here. We're at the Batuta Studios. As we walked in here, you're on the laptop, no doubt, hitting refresh on a Kickstarter. Where is your Kickstarter as we speak?
We were at about 205 grand this morning.
And your goal was?
250. So we gave ourselves like 6 and a bit weeks to get there. It'll be a week tomorrow.
Amazing.
So it's been incredible. Like, it's blown us all the way, you know. Yeah. And I've kind of stopped the refresh, you know, routine, because the first couple of days I just sat in front of my computer and just refresh. But now I've realized we've just got to get away from that, you know, because there's a whole bunch of stuff we've got to do other than just raise this money.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it's been an incredible start. We're blown away by it.
Yeah, extraordinary. Yeah. So I will have given the big intro and hopefully by the time this airs, we'll have a humongous number say. And at the time we spoke, it was just over 200. And
yeah.
And I would have given a bit of a a bit of a blurb into why, but I think the number that you're seeing today is reflective of just how much as a community, as a society, I don't care who you vote for, people just want, just tell me what to do.
Yeah.
I can see we're in a fucking heap of trouble.
Yeah, totally.
Give me action. Give me action.
Yeah, 100%. And like that's been the biggest insight from this first week is just people just want to solve this problem.
Yes.
Right? And it's people from everywhere. You know, it's people from Bendigo. It's people from Perth. It's people from Sawtell. It's people from Sydney. You know, it's people right across the country, right across the age spectrum.
It's not just West End and Surrey Hills and Brunswick.
Yeah, which is great, right? Because that's what it's going to take to solve this problem is everyone, you know, all Aussies from all walks of life saying, yeah, let's solve this problem. Yeah. And I think there's so much talk out there in the media now about this problem, and there's almost an industry that's been built around talking about the problem, but there's not a whole lot of people providing a solution, you know, a tangible, real world, everyday, affordable solution that's accessible to everyone, right? And so that's what our whole thing has been. Let's just not even talk about the problem. You know, our whole approach has been, we're not here to bash people over the head about the plastic problem. You know, everybody knows it exists. There's enough people already talking about it. Let's just put a really positive spin on this and say, hey, we can solve this. And if we work together, here's the solution. Let's just go and do it. You know, as a country, let's lead the world. Let's show everyone that we're serious about it. And let's just go and do it. And in 6 weeks, you know, we're hoping to get 10,000 Aussies on board and we can solve it.
Yeah, it's humor. I mean, yes, you're right. Everybody does know. You'd be foolish and would have ignored facts. What's my two favorites? I'd love to know your two favorites. I think my two favorites are there's a prediction that if we don't do anything by 2050, there will be as much mass of plastic in the ocean as there are mass of fish.
That's a crazy number, right?
Which is horrendous.
That's a crazy thing.
And the other one was it in snowfall in Colorado, they found plastic.
It's crazy, right?
Microplastics.
Yeah. The one that got me was the plastic at the bottom of the Marianas Trench, right?
The deepest
part of the ocean is plastic. It's insane.
Yeah.
It's really insane.
It's tricky though, because you can't deny how incredibly valuable a product plastic is for our society, for our community, as far as food supply, as far as water supply, as far as healthcare. It would be tough to imagine. You can't like not use plastic overnight.
Totally.
It's done enormous good for us.
Yeah.
It
has.
For our health, for our well-being, for our safety, for our quality of life, for life expectancy, for infant mortality, whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah, just the functioning of our society, right?
And yet it has come at this colossal cost.
Yeah. I think the challenge is though, it's not plastic in itself, that's the problem. Like you said, it's an amazing invention, right? It's just the way we're using it. Like it's an incredibly cheap, incredibly durable material. It's just not designed to be used to put hand wash in that you use for a couple of weeks and then chuck in the bin. That's the challenge, right? It's how we're using it, not the plastic itself.
Yeah.
So that's why our whole business model is, you know, there's all this plastic in the ocean. Let's get it out of the ocean. Let's turn it into dispensers that you keep at your house and you just have one. Like for the rest of your life, you just have one laundry liquid bottle, right? Just because that's what plastic is designed to do. It's designed to last a lifetime.
Yeah. I'm grateful to call her a friend, Dr. Ayana Johnson. She's a marine biologist. She's a professor at NYU. And she's got this line. She opens it where she goes, like, every piece of plastic ever created is still in existence.
Yeah. That's a lot. It's a lot of plastic.
If that doesn't chill you to the core.
Yeah, totally.
You know, it is. You're right. It's a compound designed to never break down, to live forever, like to be resilient. It's extraordinary that we've been able to design this thing that can hot, cold, you know, wet, you know, acids, you name it, it can withstand it. You see in Breaking Bad when they're lugging those tubs of acid around, that's plastic.
Yeah, you know? Totally.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
And yet how we deploy it and what we do with it when we're done with it has been the thing that's undone us.
Totally. Yeah. And when you go around the world, so this idea came about, my wife and I went on this big 18-month trip around the world, right? And
hang on, who gets the time to take 18 months off work? You're not a young man.
I was fortunate enough to build a business and sell it.
Okay, hang on. Wait. Okay. So this isn't your first gig, is it? Let's talk about where, you know, what you did before. This
will be my fourth ride on the pony.
Your fourth ride. Your fourth business that you've built.
It will be, yes.
That's humongous.
Yeah.
What were the first two?
So the first one that I got involved with was called Hot Chip. And it was kind of a precursor to Fitbit, but for surfers. right? So we
built, I remember that.
We built this piece of wearable technology that was designed for surfers. I'm a surfer. You wore it in the water.
With Andrew Valda.
With Andrew Valda.
Yeah. I worked with Andrew Valda. He's been on this show.
Yeah, right.
I remember. That's how I know Hot Chip.
Yeah. So Andrew and Valda and I worked on that project. It was an awesome experience. I was like 25 at the time, my first startup. We had a bidding war between Quiksilver and Billabong for the technology. We ended up doing a deal with Billabong. We got flown over to Hawaii to launch this at the Pipe Masters. Mick Fanning was wearing it. I'm hanging out with like all my childhood idols on the beach at Pipeline. Kelly Slater's there. Mick Fanning's there. Parker's over there. They're all wearing this piece of technology that we developed to track their activity in the water. So it was an amazing, just like incredible thing to do when you're 25. And then the GFC happened. Right. And Billabong nearly went bankrupt, right? It was nearly bought by Kmart. Everyone in the global senior management team left the business.
Yeah.
And just all new projects got put on hold, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it actually never went to stores. It never actually saw the light of day. We did a kind of media launch of it at Pipeline. So somewhere in a on a shelf in the back cupboard of Billabong, there's this idea that's sitting there that never saw the light of day. So that was the first project that I did, which was an amazing, awesome experience.
Yeah.
Then I went and started a wine brand called Cake Wines with a really good friend of mine. That was in about 2011, I think we started that business. So making wines out of Adelaide Hills, we had like a national distribution network. We opened a cellar door here in Redfern, which was an amazing, you know, experience. I grew that business for about 6 years. That was ended up being acquired by the biggest independent wine business in Australia. And that's when we decided to, my wife and I decided to pack up and head overseas. My wife during that time started a swimwear brand called Rye Swim, which I was putting some money into and helping her on the kind of sideline. Yeah. And so after those kind of three experiences, we just said, let's just take some time out. Let's just chill. It was, for me, it was 10 years back to back of startup life.
Whoa.
Right in the trenches, you know, no holidays, no money. Every dollar you're making is going back into the business, you know, living on Maggi noodles in the early days, a full hardcore startup vibe.
Yeah.
Managed to sell Cake Wines, put a bit of money in the back pocket and said, let's take some time out, take a deep breath, go and travel the world before we come back and have kids, basically.
Yeah.
So we just went on this huge trip around the world, and that's kind of where Zeroco came from, because we just saw plastic everywhere, you know. People expect to see plastic in places like India or Indonesia or China, where it's big, dense population centers. But, you know, we tried to do this trip as far off the tourist trail as we could go. You know, we spent 3 months in the Middle East and Central Asia, trekked along the border with Tajikistan and Afghanistan, stayed in Kurdish villages on the border of Iran and Iraq, went up to Kamchatka, which is the far northeast peninsula of Russia, kind of opposite Alaska. You know, these places that are crazy out of the way to get to, and we would do, you know, 2-3 week treks sometimes where you wouldn't see another person, up into, you know, these mountains in the Himalayas or in the Hindu Kush, you know, 5,000 meters above sea level, no human presence whatsoever. And you'd get to the end of this 2 week trek to a beautiful, pristine turquoise alpine lake, and there's plastic in the bottom of the lake. And you just think, how the hell did this get here? Like, I don't even know how it gets there. And so when you see that, when you see plastic in places where there just should not be plastic, it really got to both of us. And that's when we started thinking about, come back to Australia, next project is going to be something about solving this plastic problem, trying to have some impact in whatever small way I could to try and strip some of this plastic out of the system. So then basically the last probably 9 months of the trip, I just started researching plastic and just reading articles and getting into the circular economy and trying to understand the plastic supply chain, trying to understand what solutions are kind of being talked about or starting to happen around the world. And so came back to Australia with a kind of a rough idea of what a solution could look like. We got married when we got back. So came back in February, got married in March, did a 6 week wedding plan, got married at my now wife's farm in Wagga, and then sat down and said, okay, let's figure out this problem. So then I spent a really uncomfortable amount of time in supermarkets, creepily following people around supermarkets and watching how they're shopping, watching what stuff they're buying. And I guess the big aha moment came when I started spending time in the last three aisles of the supermarket, where, you know, the home cleaning and the personal care stuff is, the shampoo and the conditioner and the laundry liquid and the multi-purpose cleaner. It's totally the least sexy part of the supermarket. None of those products are cool or exciting, but it's just rampant for single-use plastic, right? You go into those aisles and it's just floor to ceiling, one end of the aisle to the other. It's just all single-use plastic. So that's when I said to myself, okay, here's a huge category. It mightn't be sexy, but it's everyday essentials. Every household in Australia, I hope, cleans their toilet, you know, at least semi-regularly. Every household in Australia washes their clothes. Every household washes their hands and their bodies. This is a rampant industry for single-use plastic, and there's no real mainstream alternative at the moment. So that's when we said, okay, this is the industry we're going to go after to start this movement. We're going to tackle single-use plastic in the home cleaning and personal care category.
Mm. There's a few things I'd love to dig into there. So let's get some definitions out.
Mm.
Single-use plastic. Let's define that.
Yes. Well, look, I had a brand contact me only a few days ago. I'm not going to name names here, but a prominent Australian brand has contacted me to talk about our definition of single-use plastic. They were a little bit concerned about, I don't know if you've seen the Kickstarter video, but I basically go around my house and pull all the single-use plastic out of all the cupboards and show the stuff that's in my...
There's a few logos there?
Well, we tried to not put any logos. Uh-huh. We deliberately turned all the bottles around backwards because...
But the bottle shapes are identifiable.
You can identify it. Yeah. Some of them you can identify. And if you work for a company...
You'll know
it's your bottle, right?
And they were like, hang on a sec.
So I got an email from a guy saying, you know, it's not quite fair to have our product in the mix.
Mm.
We're made from recyclable material, which is great. And I guess for me, there's a distinction for me between single use and what I determined to be single use and what they obviously determined to be single use. So obviously, if you're a company and you're making your plastic out of recycled plastic, that's much better than making plastic out of virgin material, right? Mm-hmm. So the current supply chain, I guess, is we extract oil from the ground. There's a byproduct that's turned into what they call in the industry virgin material, brand new plastic that gets turned into little pellets, sent to a facility, melted down and blown into a shell, a bottle shape, right? A lot of brands are still doing that. Every single bottle that gets made comes from brand new oil that's pulled out of the ground. Some brands have started using 100% recycled plastic, which means they're taking plastic that's been used once before, sending it back to a recycling facility. It's been broken down, repelletized, sent back to the manufacturer and turned back into a bottle, right? So that's obviously much, much better than using new plastic every time. But I think we need to leapfrog that whole approach, right? Because even if it's made from 100% recycled material, if you're just buying it once and you're using it and you're putting it in the bin, it is still single use, and it's still got a truck has got to come to your house and pick up that bottle and drive it to a facility. It's got to be broken down, cleaned, and remade again. So that's an incredibly carbon intensive process.
Vast amount of energy.
A lot of energy. And I'm not going to get into the recycling crisis in Australia, but a lot of the plastic's not actually being recycled. So for me, single use is if you buy it from the supermarket, you take it home, you use it, and you put it in the bin. To me, that's the simplest definition of a single-use piece of plastic, right? So what we're trying to do is strip that whole system, the whole need to recycle out of the whole system, and you have one dispenser that you use for your entire life, right? So you will have a laundry liquid bottle that we'll send to you that's made from plastic that's been pulled out of the ocean. So our model is to flip the model on its head, completely cut out new plastic altogether, completely cut out recycling, get our plastic feedstock from the ocean, plastic that's already out in the world, that's already been used and has been littered and is now going into the ocean and destroying the marine environment. Let's take that plastic out of the ocean, turn it into a bottle, a dispenser that you keep at your house forever and you use once. And then we have refill sachets that are made from 100% recycled material, plastic that is diverted from landfill. So we're working with a packaging company that's been able to get what's called post-industrial waste. So it's plastic that's been produced for a purpose and hasn't gone to market and is otherwise literally going to be heading to landfill. So we're using offcuts and scraps and basically the junk out of big manufacturing processes to make a reusable sachet that then gets delivered to your house. You use it, you fill up your dispenser, you send it back to us, we refill it. So there is no single-use plastic in the entire ZeroCo supply chain. Mm-hmm. So for me, that's where we're headed, which is leapfrog recycling, get rid of single-use plastic and move to a reuse, completely circular supply chain.
Taking recycling out of the chain is a powerful, powerful move. I'm reading this fantastic book at the moment. I think Stan Grant told me to read it. A book called How We Got to Now. And so you've heard of the butterfly effect where the flap of butterfly's wings in California can be linked through a chain to a hurricane in the Atlantic.
Yep.
The hummingbird effect is how the humming, how because a flower developed in a certain way,
mm-hmm.
The hummingbird then developed a new way to fly.
Yep.
And these two things would have never happened if one were the other. So the hummingbird effect, a perfect example of the hummingbird effect is Gutenberg creates a printing press.
Yep.
Suddenly, for the first time in human history, a huge amount of the population realizes, I can't see things close to me.
Mm.
Oh, I never had to look at things this close. Never had to, oh, shit. Okay.
So I need to invent glasses.
Bingo. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. What is glasses? We start playing with lenses. Lenses. Oh, wow. Look, I can magnify things. Oh, wow. Galileo now sees the thing. Mm-hmm. Boom. Now, and like just bang, 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 bang. Mm-hmm. All the way to now we discover microbes and we have germ theory.
Yeah.
Because it just explodes to a completely unrelated thing because one thing identified the thing for another. Like it's an extraordinary idea because it disrupts so much of the existing processes.
Yeah.
Like a piece of plastic in a lake in the Himalayas is horrible, but it is a symptom of a system.
Yep.
And it's not just picking up litter. It's like, no, there's a whole reason that's here that's not okay. So hopefully by attacking what you're attacking, you're going to further way upstream, gonna deal with that, which is great. You mentioned another really interesting word there, which I'd like to talk about, circular economy. Can you discuss that, please?
Yeah. So, look, I'm not an expert in any of this stuff, right?
It's all right.
I don't profess to be an expert, and I'm probably never going to be an expert. I'm just a guy who wants to try and figure out a solution to this thing, right?
Yeah.
And so what I've kind of learned about the circular economy is it's a really great idea, right? There's a lot of literature out there. There's a lot of people on the public speaking circuit who are out there talking about it. But there's not a lot of great examples of it actually being implemented, right? So that's kind of what we're trying to set out to do here is to prove that this elusive circular economy business model is not only feasible, but is scalable and profitable, right? Because if you can prove that this new way of doing stuff is profitable, then Unilever is going to come and do it and Procter & Gamble is going to come and do it and Johnson & Johnson are going to come and do it. Like if we can get all the big multinational companies to see that there is an opportunity here from a commercial perspective, they're going to change their ways because, look, ZeroCo is not going to solve the world's problems. We're not delusional about being able to solve this problem ourselves. But if we can, in our own little way, go and show that this model works and we can nudge the big guys to copy us, then we can have a real impact. And so that's why our whole mission is about getting as many Aussies on board as possible to send a message to the supermarkets and send a message to the big brands that this is the way we want to do stuff now.
Yeah. You're Elon Musk giving away your patents.
Exactly. Point. Yeah. So our whole thing is going to be we are going to encourage people to other brands to copy our model. Because then if everyone comes, if all the big brands do this, we all win. Everybody wins.
And I always used to think this, you know, if we wanted to change nutrition, you know, all it would take is McDonald's to go, hey, guys.
Yeah.
We changed their menu. They've already got the supply chain.
They've already got
the cold chain. They've already got the manufacturers. They've already got the farms. Yeah. They've got everything. And they've got the habits of the consumer to be like, oh, no, this is where I get my food. I guess this is what I'm eating now.
Yeah.
You know, so the idea of someone like, if you mentioned, like, I can't imagine between Procter & Gamble, Johnson & Johnson and Unilever, the billions of bottles that are used every day.
Yeah, totally.
They've already got the logistics. They own the trucks. They own the, you know, they've got, it's all there.
It's all there. It's all there.
Yeah, it's just the upstream change is what will people, I guess this is what we use now.
Yeah.
You know, this is what we do. And it's like in this city of Sydney, it's like, well, we're drinking desalinated water now. That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, this is just what this decision was made for us. And okay, that's what's happening.
Now we're doing that.
And now we're doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not a great thing, but it's, you know, it's what we're doing. So it's the upstream, that's where it's got to happen.
Yeah, totally.
Having an individual do it is one thing, but having the big player upstream make the move, that's what causes the huge change. What did you say to the guy that, or the girl, or the person that contacted you about the single use?
I just said, look, we're not here to pick fights, right? We're not going to name names. We're not here to point the finger at anybody. We just want to get engaged in negativity. Like, we just want this to be a really positive movement. And that Kickstarter video is just an honest reflection of stuff that's in my house. Well, it's in my parents' house because I've moved back in with my parents to get this idea off the ground, right?
Wow.
So I just said, like, we're not picking a fight here. We're not pointing fingers. It's just this is what's in my parents' cupboards right now. Let's just get rid of it. Let's all work together and solve the problem.
It really is one of those things, you know. And I think this is why that you haven't done anything but put a website up and it's 10 days later, all right? But I think the idea of, you know, people once said, that's not my line, but, you know, if you look at a stock market any given day on the stock market will give you an accurate reflection of the way people in a society are thinking.
Yep.
Right? This is what they feel confident in. This is what they don't feel confident in. This is the decisions they're making. They're buying less oil. They're buying more, whatever.
Yeah.
All right. And I think it's very much an indicator that vast amounts of the community are just like, we just want something to do. Show us something to do. And it does make me yearn for, in our country, leadership that would then go, hey, here's what we're going to do about this.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it is more and more turning to businesses, which shouldn't be the way, but it is. I don't know if that's going to be fast enough. The other day on the NRL Grand Final, did you see what was written on the field?
I didn't know.
VB.
Okay.
V fucking B. Has a massive logo of the NRL Grand Final on the, they've got it so it's in the right perspective when the cameras look at it, right?
Yeah.
It says VB. Brewed with 100% offset solar from 2020.
Yeah, right. Well, see, there you go.
VB.
Yeah, it's happening.
Not bloody Newtown forearm tat,
Young Henry's.
Hippie ale. Not, I'm from West End in Brisbane and this is my organic kombucha made with... No, it's like VB.
It's VB, yeah. The biggest, oldest, most conservative beer brand in the country.
Yeah. What does that tell you?
It's a great sign, right?
Isn't it?
It's a great sign.
Yeah, but that might be what it takes. People just want an option.
Yep.
I fly for my job.
Yep.
I offset every plane that I take. I'd love to have an option.
Yep.
And I think just through the fact that I live in a modern society and I have a modern life, there's aspects of my existence that require carbon to be admitted into the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And I wish it wasn't the way. And I offset everything I possibly can. I even figured out how much carbon it took to make my car.
Yeah, okay.
9 tons if you're interested.
Right.
And I offset that.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, whatever I can do, I want to be able to do. And I think I'm not alone.
No, you're not.
I think there's many people that just want that.
Yeah, totally.
And I think that's what you really hit on.
Yep. Every day for the last, we're on day six today. For the last 6 days, I wake up in the morning and my inbox is just full of emails from complete strangers just saying that this is awesome, basically, right? And just saying thank you for doing this because we want it. We just want this solution. And so many people are like, oh, I had that idea. I should have done it, Which is awesome because it means that people are into it. And so it's been so heartening for me to wake up every day and go, people get it.
Well, I certainly hope, and hopefully through this conversation, we can let other entrepreneurs kind of know. And I'll never forget, it was a bloke by the name of Shia Gassi. He started an electric car company called Better Place. It was, in the electric car world, there was Beta and VHS, right? And Shia Gassi's was a battery swap model where you basically pulled your car up to something equivalent of a car wash.
Yeah, swap and go.
Swap and go, boom, and you drive away with a full battery.
Yeah.
Didn't take off.
Yeah.
But I'll never forget, I saw him at do a keynote once. Incredible guy. And he just says, make no mistake, there are billions of dollars to be made in saving the planet.
Yeah.
Billions.
Yeah.
And I certainly hope that other entrepreneurs and other companies are buoyed on by the response to what's happening here with you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Of like, holy shit, we can make some serious coin here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, this is how it's going to be solved. I genuinely believe, and I don't want to poo-poo petitions because they're great, but if you want to create change, you've got to go and do it. That's always been my philosophy, right? And so this project has been me saying, I don't want single-use plastic in my life. I'm pretty sure other people don't. I'm just going to go and build a solution. And I'm pretty sure people will come on board and join the mission. And this is how it's going to happen with other entrepreneurs going, there's an opportunity to do something, seeing a big problem in the world and finding an opportunity and then solving that problem, right? And other people will come on board. That's how it's going to happen. And then the big guys will react because the only way the big guys react is if you hurt their bottom line. So as soon as ZeroCo starts taking revenue away from Unilever or from whoever, they're going to notice that and then they're going to change their ways. Like we can sit around and send a petition to Unilever all we want. It's not going to change their behavior until it has a financial impact on their business. That's just the nature of the world. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to hurt everyone else's bottom line so that they change their behavior, so that we all win, right? It's as honest as I can be about it.
Look, what a great business model. I think, you should go up to UTS and lecture straight away. I'm sure you're not alone. You know, I'm sure you're not alone in other, you know, I'm sure there's other entrepreneurs that are working in this, in totally. This space.
And I hope that this project, we're only 6 days in, we've still got 40 days to go in this campaign. I hope we do get 10,000 Aussies on board so we can strip 1 million bottles out of the supply chain in our first year. Because then that does, it sends ripples. Like there's people already contacting us from America saying, when are you launching in America? When are you launching in the UK? So already people have become aware of this project we're working on. And I have no doubt that someone in America, an entrepreneur, will see this campaign and go and start doing one like tomorrow probably.
Yeah.
And that's great. Like as much as I'd love to be able to go and launch Zero Co in America, someone's going to beat me to it. And that's awesome because then there's a solution. And our whole thing is going to be like radically transparent business model. If there's anyone listening that wants to know how I'm doing it, email me and I'll tell you, because the more businesses who do this, the better the result for everybody.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be... Yeah, it is. And how your attitude towards it is, I think, the attitude that people are going to have moving forward. I've come up with this humongous idea that will strip plastic out of the economy, strip plastic out of the environment, yet you can't have it because it's mine.
Yeah.
While, I don't know, 50 years ago, that might have been the way that, you know, would get investors on board.
Yeah.
I think now we just haven't got the time.
Yeah.
We've just totally. Got to be able to go, listen.
Copy
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you're literally Elon Musk taking the patents off the walls, going, have it,
yep.
Do it, go.
Yep.
He's exactly how he did it.
Totally. And it's a big world and there's lots of people and there's lots of markets, right? So if we can do a really good job here in Australia, maybe we go to New Zealand, I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe we encourage other people to do it in India or in China or in France or Germany or wherever, right?
Yeah.
Because the more people doing this, the better.
Well, what are the basic needs? What does a community need? It needs, for your business model, you need, because you're using a postal service.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just as long as you have a postal service.
Yeah. All of the infrastructure exists for this idea everywhere in the world. We're not inventing anything new here.
Yeah.
The machines exist. The supply chains exist. The materials exist.
Yeah.
You know, we're not reinventing the wheel here.
It's not like you need to put a factory somewhere. As long as you can ship a container full of the stuff there,
yep.
And then have a warehousing situation where people can deliver to and from.
Yeah,
that's totally. Fine.
Yeah,
you're in.
It's all there. Yeah. And there's people that make hand wash in every country in the world. Mm-hmm. It's like we're not inventing a new product category here.
No.
There's manufacturing systems, there's supply chains, it's all there. It's just having the willpower to challenge the model, the way that it's delivered, and going and doing it.
And you're carbon offsetting the entire process, including the delivery.
So right now, we're going to be offsetting the delivery part of it through a whole bunch of certified carbon offsets. We'll be working with a whole bunch of different third-party courier and logistics partners, and most of them now have got certified carbon offset programs. But the goal eventually is to have our own fleet of electric vehicles operating in capital cities, because there's a difference between carbon offsetting and zero carbon. Right. So carbon offsetting is you put it in a truck that's or in a van that's powered by petrol and it has emissions to deliver it to your house. And then we go and do something to offset that emission by buying a credit that goes and plants seaweed or plants mangroves or whatever, right, through the carbon trading system. But then there's zero carbon, which is no carbon produced in the first place. So if you can get to a point where we have electric vehicles on the road that are charged by solar power, then there is no carbon emitted at all. So we don't need to do the offset stuff, which is You know, if we can get to that point as a society, man, that's where we've got to get to. So our vision is to get there as quickly as we can. Obviously, it takes a bunch of money to go and buy a bunch of electric vehicles. So again, the more people that come on board and support the Kickstarter campaign, the quicker we can get electric vehicles on the road, the quicker we can solve the totality of the problem.
Yeah.
And then I guess as part of that carbon offset program, we've got a not-for-profit called the Seaweed Project, which we've been talking about collaborating on, to have a direct impact on that, where we will take funds from ZeroCo and we will go and build, plant large-scale seaweed farms to extract carbon from the atmosphere, deacidify the oceans, help with fishery depletion. That's the kind of big long-term vision we've got here, is tackle the plastic problem with our business, and the proceeds from the business helps tackle the climate problem by stripping carbon out of the atmosphere.
Well, then that's really a humongous part of what we need to do, we are doing, and we will need to do far more of, is to pull the carbon out of the system.
Totally.
Having 5 billion years of stored solar energy, because when, you know, whatever, coal, oil, you name it, it's essentially solar energy, but it's been stored in either a liquid form or a solid form, to then unleash that into an atmosphere, suddenly you've got 5 billion years worth of carbon sitting in the atmosphere at once.
Yeah.
Not great.
Yeah. Not a great idea.
Not a great idea.
Not one of humanity's best ideas.
No. But great ideas is, how do we get it back out?
Exactly.
Sucking it out of the air, very tricky.
Yep.
Because the air is the air. It's not a very conductive substance. It's gaseous. It's hard. It's not very concentrated. Seawater, however, far more concentrated, far more conductive.
Totally.
So there's all kinds of interesting ways you can pull carbon out of seawater. And talk to me about the seaweed. tell me about that. Like, I've seen some extraordinary projections. What is good about seaweed as far as getting carbon out of the system?
Yeah, okay. So, look, again, I'm by no means an expert in this area. Again, I'm on a learning journey with this. I read Tim Flannery's book, watched the TED Talks. I've started digging into carbon capture stuff. And, look, my philosophy here is that there's a really great natural existing solution to this problem, which is
that requires zero energy,
which doesn't require anything, right? That's been formed over millions of years of evolution to do exactly what we're trying to do as a species, which is take carbon out of the atmosphere, right? And that's plants. Okay, so you have a whole bunch of different plants that can extract and store carbon in different quantities. You have mangroves is a really great one. You have obviously grasslands and forests, and then you have kelp, seaweed. And there's been a little bit of study going on around the world and a few people starting to look at this. But the research shows that kelp has the potential, the greatest possible potential of all of the plant options to extract carbon from the atmosphere. Some of the species can grow up to a meter a day.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it's crazy. And essentially, it's grass that grows in the sea, right? And you can grow a meter a day on each one of these strands. It is pulling carbon out of the ocean. It's deacidifying the ocean, and it has, you know, flow-on effects of the places where they've done tests on this stuff around the world. Fishery environments start to blossom again, because you're creating a natural environment where fish want to go. So it's not only tackling the carbon problem, it's also helping with fisheries depletion.
Yeah.
So there's a whole bunch of business models being explored now. You know, there's a whole bunch of commercial opportunities for the seaweed itself as, you know, a protein source for the billions of people in Asia that are coming out of poverty and are looking for protein. It's being used as fertilizer. There's a whole bunch of commercial opportunities for the seaweed itself, apart from or separate to the fact that it's just taking carbon out of the atmosphere and either putting it to the bottom of the ocean or turning it into a new product.
So, yeah, let's kind of discuss that for a little bit, because I think my very, very layman's explanation of this is that we've gotten away with doing what we're doing as far as burning things at scale since the Industrial Revolution, because the ocean has done an extraordinary job of absorbing the carbon out of the atmosphere.
Correct.
All right, if the ocean didn't do it, we would have been fucked a long time ago.
Yep.
But the ocean, this huge, vast, massive, you know, 72% of the planet is covered in this stuff, has been sucking the carbon out of the atmosphere. Unfortunately, what that does, it creates carbonic acid inside the ocean, which is the tingly thing you get on your tongue when you sip a fizzy drink.
Yes.
That's carbonic acid.
Yes.
That's the acidification we're talking about. Not good for
anything
that lives there.
Very good.
Nobody wants an acidic environment. It burns your tongue. It'll burn a fish.
Yes.
All right? Not great.
Yes.
And it kills things. Bad.
Too many fish floating around with burnt tongues right now.
Bad. All right. Also, you know, I think significantly weakens the shells of crustacea and such and such. So bad, bad, bad.
Yeah.
However, taking carbon out of the ocean is taking carbon out of the atmosphere because it's come, it's correct, one step after we've put it in there.
Yep.
It's gone to the air. The ocean sucked it out. We're sucking it from there.
Yep.
Okay. And then when you talk about everything is made of carbon.
Yes.
Every single thing is made of carbon. So a meter a day of this particular plant is a meter's worth of, I don't know how many grams that is.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Of carbon. Yeah. That have been pulled from the water around it.
Correct.
It is now no longer, this molecule has come out of the seawater around it and has been converted into this plant.
A living organism.
And now it is no longer carbonic acid. Mm-hmm. Now it is, it's a strand of something.
Yes.
And now this can be, as long as we don't burn it or let it decompose, it stays that way.
Yep.
It stays stored.
It's locked.
Yeah, it's locked in there. So, and these, this is the important thing to do is like if we do pull it again out of the ocean and turn it into food or fertilizer or whatever, as long as we are careful with it, it stays that way. It stays in this form, which is very, very, very important.
Yep.
And to deploy it at scale, because I've seen interesting ones where sucking carbon dioxide out of atmosphere and then freezing it and putting it into a gaseous form and then pumping it to the bottom of the sea because it can hold it pressure at something like 20,000 feet or whatever at the Mariana Trench. So there's these giant, the idea of putting these giant balloons, these bubbles of CO2 at the bottom of the ocean, which would just stay there. Like, that's interesting. Difficult,
yes.
Energy intensive.
Yep.
I've seen ones where, you know, you can pull calcium carbonate out of the sea. So it basically turns the same stuff that eggshells are made of, basically.
Yep.
Again, energy intensive. This, I don't know anything about farming seaweed or harvesting seaweed. I'm getting, was it just, what do you plant it? Do you have to put it in a planter pot like you get from Woolies? Like, what do you do with it?
Yeah, so what some of the experiments are working on is they're building kind of like an artificial reef, almost a floating reef, whether it's like a metal structure. Exactly that. And they're planting seaweed on these floating devices, and as the seaweed grows and gets bigger, it gets heavier, and so the tray sinks deeper and deeper into the ocean, right? And so some people are talking about how far you can do that, because obviously seaweed only grows to a certain depth in the water because it gets too cold.
Yes.
But then there's models about, okay, can we just eventually sink the seaweed again to the bottom of the ocean and store it on the bottom of the ocean for all time? So there's a whole bunch of different models being explored at the moment. There's a whole bunch of, it's still very new, right? And I don't have all the answers. I'm on a journey to find the answers. Mm. And as I said, you know, we've got to make ZeroCo work so we can be generating profit. So we can be putting that money into building seaweed farms.
What if, like, and now I'm starting to get like, how about we, if there's already a naturally growing seaweed that can grow at that rate, like, how do we then gene splice that with something else to create this kind of
the mega seaweed?
Exactly.
Yeah,
how do we
that,
like, create this like evil dead vine that grows at such a astonishing rate, but we know we is what's a plant that can't pollinate, so it can't become a weed?
Yeah, okay.
You know, so it it only grows once, like, so it can't create it, can't
a single use plant.
A single use plant. You know what I mean? Like,
I know what you mean.
So a neutered plant, so it won't pollinate, so it won't become a weed. It will only grow once, you know, and this is one particular organism, and it will grow.
Yeah.
Like, this
Monsanto
sort of
has been good at doing that.
Well, here's the thing, man. There's good and bad to everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The amount of lives that have been saved by, like, don't even get me started on genetic. Every food I eat in my life has been genetically modified.
The
corn I ate for dinner last night was not natural corn.
Yes.
That is squillions of cross-pollinations between farmers to get to a, you know, an actual tasty, sweet piece of corn.
Over 10,000 years.
That is genetically modified food, all right?
But
it
human
really,
tinkering.
It is. Yeah. It absolutely is. And so there's a lot to be, like, no one's been doing CRISPR stuff until, like, the last 3 years, right? So, like, let's just be honest. But the potential is really there. And, you know, the idea of, as you mentioned, as a protein source, it's so important. And I love eating seaweed. I eat it all the time. I think it's great. No, it's really good.
Awesome.
It's a really handy thing to cook with.
And it's tasty.
It is really tasty. It's a really great thing to make a wrap with, which I also really enjoy.
Yes.
And as you mentioned, the largest growing economy on the planet is the middle class of China.
Mm.
Thankfully, don't think seaweed's weird.
Mm,
part of the diet.
Love seaweed.
Get on board.
Totally.
You know, who? If we could go back 20 years and go, all right, mate, we're going to plant some kale. Kale, what the fuck's that?
Yep.
Trust me.
It's going to be huge.
Kale's going all in on kale. If you'd gone all in on kale, like, you'd be living large right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right? So similarly, you know, here's an opportunity to what's an agricultural, I don't know, milk, for example.
Yep.
Like dairy milk. Like, you know, Westerners love it. Bizarre, though, because—
Wheat.
Wheat. Humongous, you know. It's that, it's that of that scale that
it can
we're talking,
be.
Isn't it?
It can be, yeah. And there's a lot of, look, it's happening in Asia, right? The Chinese are building huge seaweed farms to feed their people. It's happening. These things, these projects are starting to happen around the world. Yeah.
Far out, man.
And the other great thing about seaweed is it grows in the ocean, right? There's a fair bit of ocean on the planet.
Most of the planet is ocean.
There's a bit more ocean than land on the planet.
To one, I think there's one. It's a 1-3 ratio, 72% of the world,
So there's lots of places to grow seaweed.
Yeah. When I think about, you know, this country and what we're talking about here is that there's going to be a point where no one wants to buy our coal anymore.
There is.
And it's going to come pretty soon.
It's happening.
It's going to come real soon.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going
to
do?
We need to replace those jobs. We need to replace that tax revenue.
We need to
replace that industry.
We absolutely have to. There needs to be a transition for all those industries.
Yep.
We have to be forward thinking enough to go, all right.
We do.
These jobs that I've been standing in front of a hard hat on the 6 o'clock news going, like, if you really care about jobs, look 20 years in the future. How are you going to look after those jobs?
Yep.
What industries is the world going to need?
Yeah, totally.
And stuff like what you're talking about is, and I'm sure this is the same with plastic manufacturing. People are like, what are we going to do with the people that make all the plastic?
Yeah, yeah.
How are we going to help them? Yeah. They need jobs.
Yeah.
You know, so similarly, so like it really needs that visionary kind of leadership thinking of how can we protect our economy and protect and make bold moves now, so that by the time the baby that's going to visit you soon and my little boy is and my daughter, when they're my age, that
it's not a crappy place.
No.
We don't want it to be a
crappy place.
We've
still got highways and healthcare.
Totally. Yeah. Well, luckily there's people working on this stuff, right? So like Mike Cannon-Brooks, I don't know if you've heard about the project they're talking about.
He's an amazing guy.
Giant solar farms in the Northern Territory with a pipeline that's going to go to Asia to ship solar power generated in Australia into Singapore. Right? They're talking about building these types of projects now. Huge, mass industrial scale projects that are going to create the jobs of the future, right? It's incredible. There are amazing people out there working on these big ideas.
Hang on. Mike's going to build.
I think it's actually, what's his business partner? Scott Farquhar. Now, I was reading an article. They're working on a project about solar farming in the Northern Territory and shipping the electricity through sea cables into Asia.
Fuck,
it's a huge idea, right? An incredible, amazing idea. And come from a guy who's just gone, I'm going to try and solve this problem because the government's not acting on this stuff. Just go and do it, right?
He's an amazing cat.
And luckily he's got a few dollars he can go and do stuff, which is amazing.
Well, similarly, you know, he is a very clever, you know, worked very, very,
very
hard
smart
to bring Atlassian to where it is.
Yep.
And thankfully, you know, this planet has enough people that could be Bond villains.
Yeah, yeah.
And thankfully he's not.
Hats off to that guy.
Yeah.
He's a fucking legend.
Absolutely. And an Australian who really deserves our support. And
totally.
Like ideas like that are just monsters. And like, and you're absolutely right. It sucks that our leaders in government aren't being visionary enough.
Mm.
Though I guess, you know, if you're a conservative person, your idea of small government and business will lead the way. The market will sort it out. The invisible hand will fix it.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the invisible hand waits a really long time before it hits go.
Yeah.
And that's the shitty part that we have to wait for. And it's I think you're right, as you said earlier, I think the economics of it all will, I mean, if you've seen the photos of what even a meter sea level rise will do to every major city in the world.
It's crazy.
It's like, what fucking real estate developer wants that?
Yeah, totally.
Fuck that.
Yeah.
Nobody wants that.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, what happens to your holiday house in the Hamptons, mate?
Yeah.
It's gone.
Becomes a swimming pool.
Exactly.
Your living room is now a swimming pool, an ocean pool.
Exactly. And you know, these places that you used to think, wow, look at these beautiful verdant plains. Well, now they're new cities because everyone had to evacuate from the coastlines.
Yeah, yeah.
And nobody wants that.
I know. It's crazy, right?
Yeah.
And also, I constantly think about this stuff when I'm traveling, about these beautiful cities on the water.
Mm.
If sea level does rise a meter and these cities go underwater, we're not going to go in and remove all the buildings, right?
No.
There's just going to be buildings in the ocean. There's not going to be beaches anymore. The beaches will have, like, There'll be buildings.
Yeah.
Like buildings submerged in water. If we don't do something about this, that's what's going to happen.
There'll be no more swimming.
It's mind-boggling, right?
Or we'll have to swim with shoes for eternity.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Like when you swim in a creek and you got to put your shoes on so you don't hit a log or something. That's what... There's no more barefoot swimming for anyone.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
That's no fun. That's no fun for anybody.
Totally. I think the good thing about the plastic issue, though, is whilst there is still a small section of the community out there globally who want to debate whether climate change is happening or not, and I'm not going to get into that, but the good thing about plastic is, the plastic problem, is that nobody's debating it because you can see it, right? Yeah. Like you go to the beach and it's there. So Scott Morrison coming out while at the UN at supposedly at a climate conference and starting to talk about plastic, it's amazing that he's taking a perspective on this and he's saying we're going to solve it. I think it's great because the good thing about this bad problem is you can see it. So there's no debate about plastic. We all see it every single day. You know, you go to the beach, you go to Bondi Beach. There's plastic on Bondi Beach every morning. They've got trucks there cleaning it up every day. So there's no debate about the plastic problem, which means I'm pretty hopeful we're going to solve this problem pretty quickly because there is consensus.
And if the hummingbird effect were true, then you're using hopefully largely diminishing the dream, the fairy tale would be that you're largely diminishing an off-cut product that is a fairly sizable chunk of the oil revenue.
Yep.
And then as investors see, we're not making as much money as we used to. Let's put our money somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Then divestment starts to happen in the oil industry. And then, you know, at the end, climate change starts to get addressed through the power of economics, which is a bit shit. That's the way it's hopefully going to be, but this is what we are.
That's how it works.
This is where we are.
That's how it's always worked.
It's sad, but here we are.
Yeah.
Extraordinary. What do you need in the next, like this, as you mentioned, you stop hitting refresh, you're like, oh, crikey, I've now got to deliver. Yeah.
So
what happens now? You know, I don't know much about startup stuff, but I know the word sprint is involved.
Yeah. So we gave ourselves a bit over 6 weeks in this Kickstarter campaign, right? The base target we need to hit is $250,000, or $251,313 to be precise. That's enough money to get us into production to make this thing happen. We will hit that in the next 48 hours based on our kind of run rate, which gives us nearly 6 weeks now to turn this little snowball into an avalanche. So the big mission we're trying to set out here is to remove 1 million single-use plastic bottles from the planet within our first 12 months. And to do that, we need to get 14,000 Aussies on board and to support our Kickstarter campaign to buy their first box of products and join this movement. We're at about 1,800 as of today. So we're over 10% of the way, almost 15% of the way there, and we've still got 6 weeks to go. So that's the big rallying cry to Australia is every Aussie from every town, city, state around the country should join us on this mission and solve this problem by getting a box. If we get to 14,000 households, we remove 1 million bottles from the planet in our first year.
And that million is a nut punch to everybody. Coles, to Woolies, to the big players. That's enough to make people listen go, hang on, that's enough to go, where did that 1% of sales go?
There's a groundswell of support here, right?
Yeah.
That's when that happens. It's a tipping point.
Did you figure that out, like 1 million was the tipping point?
Well, I just think 1 million's a nice number.
It's a bloody
good
number.
It's a really big number.
Who doesn't love that number?
It's a big, audacious, bold number.
Yeah.
And look, I hope we get there. I really hope we do. 14,000 households is not a huge percentage. There's over 9 million households in Australia, so it's a tiny fraction of households. But to be able to strip 1 million bottles out of the supply chain in our first year, it's a huge thing that our country can be proud of. We can lead the world here. Yeah. You know, it's not just a signal to the supermarkets and to the big brands. It's a signal to people in power in Australia. It's a signal to other countries and other people around the world that Australia is, we're serious about this and we're going to take a leadership perspective. And it would be such an amazing thing for us as a country to be proud of and say we are leading the world in this plastic problem.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, it's you've already got some big players paying attention.
Yep.
But it's enough of a number that, because when you're Johnson & Johnson, Unilever, your margins are tiny.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you make a lot of money because you ship billions of this stuff.
Yeah.
And so if you lose 1%, that's significant.
Mm-hmm.
That's significant. And that'll make you go, hang on a second, where'd that 1% go?
Exactly.
And then they start to dig in.
Yeah.
And then they make it, they go, well, we've got a choice to make here.
Yep.
You know, hopefully you can demonstrate that this is the other part that sucks, but it's the way out of the world. You can demonstrate that there is value for the brand to look. It's VB saying they're going to be made by solar power.
Yeah.
There's value to the brand to be said, look at us. Look at what we're doing for exactly. you. And then bang.
Yep.
You know, and if that's what it takes, man.
Yep. So be it.
So, mate, I can't thank you enough for this conversation. I'm real excited for you. I'm great. I'm glad it's you. I'm glad that it's not your first one. Yep. I'm glad you've had a couple. No, it's really important because people do come into this and go, and we're going to do this. And then they get all the Kickstarter money and then it just falls over because they've never run a business before and they think buying the ping pong table for the office is more important than delivering, you know, because they've watched Silicon Valley too many times. You know what I mean?
Like, totally.
It's really, really important.
I've been on the merry-go-round enough.
That you know what it is and you've eaten the Maggi noodles and you know. And that's, I think I'm excited for you.
Yeah, and we've also got some amazing investors that have come on board.
Great.
Rob Chapman, the ex-CEO of St. George Bank, currently the chairman of the Adelaide Crows, sits on the board of Cooper's Brewery. Jenny Ma, former KPMG director. Raymond Spencer, serious entrepreneur. They've tipped in money. They believe in the project. They sit on my board now as well. I've got a board meeting with those guys next week. So I've got some 60-year-old men and a 40-year-old woman sitting on a board guiding this thing in the background to make sure that we do deliver this thing properly. So it's not just me. It's not just my experience. There's 50 years of business experience sitting behind it.
Amazing.
Which is awesome. And I'm so stoked that those guys came on board. You know, they've helped bring this to fruition as much as anybody else.
Yeah. Well, when it speaks volumes when someone who's like, and we've all, you know, seen what the Royal Commission said, but when someone who's like from the banking industry has gone, boom, there's an opportunity.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just the right thing to do. That's where the money's going to get made.
Yeah.
And I think those, any business, if you're listening right now and you're creating a business, if you're not creating a business that is not only just the right thing to do, but also like a real proper triple bottom line business, then, you know, what are you doing?
Yeah, totally.
I think the time of just exploitation for wealth is over.
Yeah.
I don't think consumers want that anymore.
Yeah, totally. I think if you're trying to start a new business and it's not purpose-driven, if you don't have a mission beyond just making money, you're just not going to succeed. Like, we have moved so far beyond that, beyond just money for money's sake. People want things that solve problems. And if you are solving a problem, people will support you. That's what I've learned in 6 days of having this project live. You have an idea, you try and solve a problem, you be honest and transparent with people about it. You tell them the vision, you ask them to join you. And so far, people have joined us and it's been amazing. So, yeah.
Because like I said when I started this conversation with you, I think people just, everyone knows.
Everybody knows.
We've got to do something.
Yeah.
But I can't do anything.
Yeah.
I want to do something. Oh, here's something I can do. Let me
now,
do it.
Here it is right now.
I'll do it today.
Yep.
Unreal. Yep. The best. All the best with it, man. It's going to be awesome.
Thank you so much.
So good. That was a really good one. Thank you, mate. That was Mike Smith. You can find out more about Mike at zeroco.com.au. That's Z-E-R-O-C-O, zeroco.com.au. A big thanks to my audio producer, Andy Marr, who's cut this show together, Rachel Barrett, my show producer, Mike Mills, Toe Hider, who made the music today, and as always, Clancy, Errol, Shannon and Anthony and the team at the Batuta Advocate for letting me use their studios. It's always great to record a show there. I hope you had a fantastic week. I hope you have a fantastic week. Sorry, future Dan Ginsberg. I hope what you're doing is great. And thanks for being a part of this. If you need me through the week, send osheremail@gmail.com. Until I speak to you Friday, sleep well and dream of beautiful things.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.